What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's time!
The shot broken up in front, and what a slick backhand try right in front of Chris Mason. And now the quick pass down the middle, breaking in, and a backhand stop by Chris Mason. And Marlowe with a 2-on-1, a 3-on-1, and what a stop by Mason. Chichu right in front, and what a stop on Ekman by Mason.
And goal!
Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing Heating, Hilly Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Games Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Chris Mason, C. Mace, joins us now, brought to you by Coleman Tractor and Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. I appreciate you for joining us, C. Mace. Predators on a nice 11-day break. They get some time off during the All-Star break. As a former player, how would you approach this break, and how do you think the Predators should approach this break in between the All-Star break, in between the All-Star game?
It's just to, honestly, just to get away, just what I'm doing right now. I'm in Kodak, Tennessee, and we shot some clays and just trying to take your mind off of hockey and just kind of recharge the batteries mentally, physically. Guys are banged up, and, you know, there's a lot of underlying physical issues that guys play with every night. And the break is all about just mentally resetting and physically kind of healing up. And then when you come back, you're ready to go and should have the, you know, the batteries charged a little more than they were before the break. But just get in the way and try to take your mind off it, and then When it's over, you're back at it, and you have everything you got to give for the final stretch here, because it's going to be next stretch after the break is extremely important for this team.
Chris Mason is with us. Looking at the Athletic rankings for the NHL prospect pool, this is from Scott Wheeler. He has the Predators at the 10th best prospect pool ranking. What's your interpretation of that, and what does that say about the drafting and the development of this Nashville Predators team?
I think that's huge. You said it was 10th?
10th.
Yeah, and that's I think that's excellent. I think we're starting to see some of these guys that, you know, we've heard about and seen at developmental camps, and they're coming in and they do a good job of developing these kids, so when they finally come up to play, they're ready to go. And a lot of their picks, the Preds, you know, they haven't had that high of a pick. I mean, Askarov at 11th, I think it was. You know, that's been their highest pick in a while, because, you know, they've done well, so you don't get your top five picks. But to me, you have to identify those players. That's the hard thing to do. You know, you look at Yusel Parsons, and the kid's a seventh rounder. He comes over, he's 21 years old, he's ready to play in the league. Luke Evangelista, this kid's a natural goal scorer. You know, he's young right now, but once he develops a little more and understands, you know, the pro game and is mature enough to come up and handle, you know, the defensive side of things and everything that goes with it. So he's not playing on the third and fourth line. He can come up and just score goals. You know, he's a good prospect. We saw one game of Yaroslav Askarov. The kid's going to be a star. He's got a ways to go. But I think when you are ranked in that, that's obviously just kind of taking stock of what's going on. But I think a team that's in the position of the Predators, that's kind of, do we, you know, try to go in the direction of the rebuild right now? Do we give this team a chance to make the run to the playoffs? Obviously, the next couple weeks out of the break will be absolutely massive in terms of that. But either way you cut it, you know, you've got good young kids in the system. So that's always, always a good sign.
I think it is interesting, Mace, that if you look at the prospects, the way they rank them, you mentioned a couple of them. Yusel Parsonen, who's doing so well for them right now, is number six on the list. Five of the top seven, are first-round picks that they've picked since 2019. They include Phil Tomasino in there, who obviously we know has played on the NHL level. They had some interesting thoughts on him. Again, this is on the Athletic site if people want to look in detail. But one thing that jumped out at me is here's a team that hasn't traded the first-round pick since 2018, and that's really helped them restock the farm system. So you look at LaRue, Svechkov, who's still playing over in the KHL. Of course, Joachim Kemmel, who they just picked last summer. He's only 18. He was listed as number one. They think he could be a top line guy, a big time goal scorer. So there's a lot of other teams. Just in contrast, I looked at the Islanders. They just traded for Bo Horvat. They traded their first round pick to get him. That's the fourth straight year that they've traded the first round pick. So the cupboard isn't bare, and part of the reason is they've resisted making those rental deals and things like that.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And you know, there's certain times. I mean, I think you always have to, depending. It's so hard because you look at any season. At any point, any team can win. I think last year there was, to me, it was a no-brainer. I think a pretty clear cut was going to be, you know, from the West anyway, was going to be the Avalanche, and they pretty much ran through everybody. But it's hard when, you know, you've been in the Predators situation and you're 8-6, you know, are you going to finish, you know, third in your division and be able to do it? Anybody win? I don't think there's a clear-cut favorite this year. That's what makes this year really tough, because you thought early, oh, here Vegas is looking good. Well, now they're, you know, they're coming back to reality. Colorado, you think, you have to think eventually they might get up, but they don't have, you know, they don't have Kadri. They've got a completely different team. They're not the powerhouse right now anyway as they were last year. So but the fact that they've been able, the Predators have been able to hold on to their first round picks, I think regardless of what happens in the next few weeks, I think the future is obviously you have all these kids that are talented. Phil Tomasino is going to eventually come up, and you already know he can play in the NHL. But to me, when you have a kid that's young, I think the best thing for him is to go down and play and dominate, build confidence, become a leader. If you're a young kid in the NHL, it takes a long time because you don't have a voice in the room. You're not a leader. Those things take time, you know, to work on. It's like any other skill. You know, he's not necessarily going to get all the power play. At least he's down there. He's killing penalties. He'd never kill penalties up here with the Predators. He's going to build his game, although he could play right now and be effective. When he comes up, he'll be better for having spent that time in Milwaukee. I just know it. And, you know, the fact that the Predators do have these guys and Kemmel and Svechkov, never know how they're going to turn out. But the fact that they're, you know, doing what they are doing right now and are successful prospects is a good sign for the Predators' future, no doubt.
Another roadmap, I think, is part of the approach with Tomasino. I know there's a lot of Predator fans that are frustrated and think that Tomasino needs to be back up. And I think there's an argument to be made of, you know, what would have happened had he played or already been up here. But I think they can look at what they did with Cody Glass last year, who, by the way, is not one of the prospects. He's now 23, so he doesn't count on this top 10 ranking. But now we see Cody Glass has made a huge jump from last year to this year, where they send him down, and he played virtually the entire season in Milwaukee last year. I think they're hoping that approach helps with Tomasino as well. But let's talk about Cody Glass for a second, because if you're looking for, Mace, reasons why Nashville has moved into this position and are in the race here, Cody Glass is a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. His development, he's been a really great story. And that's, to me, is why you don't rush a player, because he came into the, you know, into the system last year, obviously with the trade. He wasn't ready to handle that. You keep a kid like that up in Nashville. Yes, he's got the skills. Yes, Tomasino can play in the National Hockey League. If you're looking for goals to score, yes, he's more talented than Cole Smith. But you don't want him on the third and fourth lines, especially if he's not going to be on the penalty kill. They've got completely different skill sets, and you have to have certain guys slotting in certain roles. Tomasino will be up here, and once he comes back up, he'll be for good. The other one is Cody Glass. Had they not sent him down last year, he's just a completely different player. He was immature as a player in terms of knowing the commitment level to playing on both sides of the puck, to have that urgency to get on the forecheck. He was a skill young kid who's going to come in and he's going to, one shift, he's going to dazzle you and he's going to make these great plays. Oh, look at this kid. He's going to be, he's going to score 50 or whatever you're going to say. And then all of a sudden he disappears when a game turns a certain way because he doesn't understand quite how to play on the other side of the puck and those types of things in order to get the puck back and do all the awesome things that he can do offensively. So there's a lot of value, and I know fans are frustrated because you don't have your guy, Tomasino, who showed last year. I mean, the kid can score. I love the kid. I love him. I think he could be on this team this season. So does everybody else, but it's not the best thing for him right now and for the team long term. So Cody Glass is a great example of what that 1 year of that, get that seasoning, build your game, build your confidence, and then when you come back up, you're still going to have some learning curve, but it's not going to be as much, and you're going to have a better understanding of exactly what you have to do to get it done at the highest level.
Tomasino's only 21. Last one for you, Mace. You touched on it, but looking at the West, I think in the playoffs in the West, it's not as stacked as the East. The East looks like where the heavyweights are lining up. You mentioned we all kind of still assume that Colorado is going to become that beast by the end of the year. I think that's reasonable. Dallas looks really strong, but I see a lot of other teams that, you know, the Predators certainly have their flaws, but these teams aren't perfect either, and I see a little bit more wide open competition if you can make it into the Western playoffs.
I absolutely do, and I think St. Louis and Nashville are very much in the same boat. I think I really think there's probably 10, 11 teams that, you know, you're going to need some luck and you're going to need to knock off a better team, but it can be done. I mean, you've seen it happen over and over again, you know, with teams that are, you know, finishing that eighth seed that they make that Cinderella run. And we always go back to Nashville 2017, but there's been, it doesn't matter. This year is a completely different animal. I knew going into that playoff run or that playoff series last year that obviously with what happened in June, even if we had juice, I don't think we might steal a game. I don't think there's any chance you're beating the Colorado Avalanche. I didn't think anyone was going to beat them, and they didn't. They walked over everybody. St. Louis gave them a good go. This year, whether we're talking about the Predators, and we are, or whoever gets in those spots, I don't see any, you know, teams, maybe if Dallas goes in and they play hot or Colorado gets healthy again. There's no guarantee you get healthy by the time playoffs come. We're coming. This is the biggest stretch of the season now, and you know there's no guarantee that they do. But I don't. But I can see it. If it's Calgary or Edmonton or whoever gets in as a 7th, 8th seed, if it's the Predators, that upsets can happen. So that's why it's tricky. But man, there's so much competition for those final two wild card spots. So the Preds, out of this break, is, I think, the biggest stretch of the season because that's going to dictate what happens at the deadline.
Taking it from the ice to the diamond, C-Mace, you've got some bragging to do on your daughter, who I've heard is just killing it in softball. Tell her to keep it up. Keep holding it down for us.
Oh, thanks, Caroline. I appreciate that. She's a hard worker, and she loves it. So thank you.
Chris Mason, we appreciate you. We'll chat with you next week.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
All right, coming up next, I want to break down more of that Athletic article, of the ranking of where the Nashville Predators are. Where does it mean for the future, and what does it mean for the drafting of this franchise? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your phone, 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
I absolutely do. And I think St. Louis and Nashville are very much in the same boat. I think I really think there's probably 10, 11 teams that, you know, you're going to need some luck and you're going to need to knock off a better team, but it can be done. I mean, you've seen it happen over and over again, you know, with teams that are, you know, finishing that eighth seed that they make that Cinderella run. And we always go back to Nashville 2017, but there's been, it doesn't matter. This year is a completely different animal. I knew going into that playoff run or that playoff series last year that obviously with what happened in June, even if we had juice, I don't think we might steal a game. I don't think there's any chance you're beating the Colorado Avalanche. I didn't think anyone was going to beat them, and they didn't. They walked over everybody. St. Louis gave them a good go. This year, whether we're talking about the Predators, and we are, or whoever gets in those spots, I don't see any, you know, teams, maybe if Dallas goes in and they play hot or Colorado gets healthy again. There's no guarantee you get healthy by the time playoffs come. We're coming. This is the biggest stretch of the season now, and you know there's no guarantee that they do. But I don't. But I can see it. If it's Calgary or Edmonton or whoever gets in as a 7th, 8th seed, if it's the Predators, that upsets can happen. So that's why it's tricky.
There you go. That was Chris Mason. Looking at Scott Wheeler's most recent NHL prospect pool rankings in The Athletic, has the Nashville Predators ranked at 10th in the league in prospect pool rankings. So break this down for me, Willie, because we know some names in here. Joachim Kimmel, of course, Yaroslav Askarov, Philip Tomasino, some guys that we have seen get called up and down from Milwaukee. But in terms of this ranking as a whole, this group as a whole, what does this mean?
Well, like I hinted at with Mace, I think number one, and I know right now, and Joe Rexroad just wrote a good column on the state of the Predators during this All-Star break. It's very fair about the issues, right? There's a lot of, you know, curiosity, argument on where is this going? Where's the future? What's the maximum this team can do? What about if they went into a different direction, what it would look like? But one of the things that I think you should be fair about David Poile, he hasn't made perfect decisions for sure. But one of the things that he did do, they went from being a team that was all in on trying to win in the moment, 2017, 18, 19, where they were trading their first round pick. They were trading assets to try to win right away. They made the decision a couple years ago, they were going to hold on to first round picks. And I think they're showing that while I don't know that there's a budding superstar that you get when you pick at the top of the draft, but if you look at this list and it's 10th in the league, and that doesn't mean everything, that's just one person's opinion, right? But there's some depth in the system to where the cupboard isn't bare. They held on to the resources. They resisted just flipping guys for rentals and guys like that. So I think they've done a good job of trying to manage what they were trying to do. Get younger, still be competitive, still be a playoff team, and also not mortgage the future. So if you look coming down the pike, let's just take the top seven. Five of them are first-round picks. Mm-hmm. None of them right now are helping the team today of the first-round picks. The only guy that's helping them today as we speak is Juuso Parsonen, a seventh-round pick who's 21. And I think his future is very, very bright, and they agree. But he's number six on the list. They have these other guys rated higher. So that's encouraging to me. Askarov is the guy that, to me, is he's got an unbelievable ceiling. Mm-hmm. But he's only 20 years of age, but he's got incredible talent. It's going to take a while before you really see the fruits of this. And quite honestly, at David Poile's place in his career, he may not see the fruits of this by the time a lot of these guys are fully developed and ages 23 to 27, where you're going to start to see guys really helping you. But I do think he's to be commended by, you know, it could have been easy for him to start wheeling picks and wheeling and dealing and saying, I'm not worried about 2-3 years down the road. I'm at the end of my line here. But he's always, I think, done a good job of seeing the present and also thinking ahead 2 or 3 years. So it's encouraging, especially given the fact that they haven't had the pick in the top five here, that they've got some guys that look like they could be very good pieces down the road.
And Scott Wheeler writes, of course, this is the prospect pool rankings for the NHL. Predators are at number 10. It says, it's a strong group supported by a rare re-addition of a prospect, Philip Tomasino, as well as a trio of picks from the 2022 draft. It says they lack a high-end defense prospect. The Predators have quality and quantity at forward. I know that's been a frustration with the fans.
Forwards, yeah.
Is forwards. And also not bringing up some of these young guys where they want to see the young guys. They want to see them up here. They want to see them start contributing. And I think this almost in the weirdest way adds fuel to the fire of look at all these great prospects up forward. Why can't we see more of them?
Well, you will. I mean, most of these guys are 18, 19 years old. They're not ready yet. Now, the guy that everybody's centered in on is Tomasino for sure. And that will be something to watch in the weeks that unfold when they get back, because I do think he has upped his stock and I think he is probably more ready to help on the level that they want him to help. I think if you look at Tomasino last year, he made some plays, right? He put some points up there. I think what they want him to be, though, is a guy that can take on bigger minutes. Juuso Parsonen, for example, they sort of threw him into the fire. He was ready to help them in more ways. He could play against top competition. He could play bigger minutes. Tomasino wasn't ready for that last year, and they decided this year, let's get him ready for that. You know, let's put him in Milwaukee where he plays in those situations, has more responsibilities, can penalty kill a little bit more, can be sort of the leader of the offense, can play center some. So they've done different things to develop his skill set to where he can make an even bigger impact when he comes back up. That's the approach that they took with Cody Glass last year, who was on this list. They were 12th last year. Glass was a part of that. He's graduated up off of that list, and I think they've been vindicated with how they handled Cody Glass. And right now, knock on wood, I mean, he's become their number one center, and we'll see how that production keeps going down the stretch. But I think he's more mature. He worked on his game, and I do think Tomasino will be in the plans here in the near future. We'll see. It could be through an injury. It could be just, look, he's knocking on the door. He's not giving them any choice. They've got to bring him up. But it will be interesting to see how soon, because it can't be too soon for a lot of people, right? They want to see him.
Let's go to your phones. For Landry, by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Kevin Texan says, Willie, you are missing the point about David Poile. He's awesome. We love him. But he's had 40 years to prove he has the formula. He has only proven that he doesn't have the formula. Your thoughts?
That's been the knock on him, you know, his entire career. He's done everything that you can possibly do as a GM except win the cup,
win
right?
The cup.
He's the winningest GM of all time, consistent in getting teams to the playoffs. And this was the rap on him in Washington when he took the job with the Predators. Same kind of thing. Consistent winner, but never able to win the whole shebang. So I think that's going to be the – I think there's a lot of people that just are curious, if nothing else, what would it look like with somebody else at the helm. And I do think he's at the stage of his career where I wonder what will happen in the next few years somewhere along the line. He's going to retire. He's going to maybe bump upstairs. I don't know. There's a lot of different possibilities there. But he's going to be the GM of this team until the end of the season. So I think at the end of the year, that's when – we'll see what this team is able to accomplish, good or bad. Do they achieve their goal? Do they overachieve? Do they fall short of the goal? And I think that discussion will take care of itself at that point.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. So I thought we talked about something yesterday, and more I think about it, the more and more we talk about it, the more and more questions I have about it. So we'll get into that coming up next, 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106 through the game.
I think the best story I have about Tom Brady's addiction to winning is the one when we were in the Pro Bowl together after our third championship, after we beat the Eagles. And it's when you're at the Pro Bowl, and it's back when you played in the Pro Bowl, and then every team is introduced, and their Pro Bowl representatives are introduced, and we were the last ones in the locker room. I think it was myself, Richard Seymour, Adam Vinatieri, Larry Izzo, and Tom looks at all of us, and he says, "As you know, no one's ever won three in a row." I still had confetti. I still had confetti on the bottom of my cleats. And we're looking at Tom like, "Dude, we just had the parade, man. Can we just go out here? And they're about to announce us as world champions. And let's just play the Pro Bowl first." He wasn't there. It was always about the next one. And it was almost flabbergasting to us, like, "Dude, bro. I mean, I still got confetti on the bottom of my cleats, man. Let's take a break." But that was the addiction. That was him always looking to win at everything.
There you go. That was Teddy Bruschi on Tom Brady. And I want to get back to Tom Brady. Of course, the news of the day. Greatest of all time. Tom Brady has officially retired. He took to Twitter this morning and announced his retirement. He said, "This time for good, we shall see." But before we get into the Brady stuff and before we give our closing thoughts on Tom Brady's retirement, we've been talking about this for the past couple days. And really, when the first news came out, I thought, you know, I don't really know how much I really care about the Titans going from natural grass to artificial turf. But the more I read about it, the more I hear of, you know, whether it's Mike Vrabel or people within the Titans organization talking about the turf, the more the three of us talk about the turf, the more I think that this is just a weird situation. Because there was part of the release that talked about one of the reasons why the Titans are transitioning from natural grass to artificial turf is the injuries. Mike Vrabel, in the article that the Titans released, written by Jim Wyatt, good article by Jim Wyatt on TennesseeTitans.com, Says there's nothing more important than the health and safety of our players. We've had a lot of issues with the grass at Nissan Stadium after a certain part of the season. It's hard to grow grass. It gets slick. We put new turf down. We try and put new sod down, and it's slick. You see guys slipping, which is true. I mean, like trying to play on grass right now. It's a gross, rainy, cold day. It would be difficult. I'm not discounting that. But the more we talk about it, about how the Titans are using injuries as a reason to move to turf, when traditionally we hear about turf being way more dangerous than natural grass, D-Mace, mm-hmm. you said that after you played on turf, your body took longer to recover, it mm-hmm. hurt more. I found this article from scienceforsport.com, which, whatever that is, I did my Google due diligence, and this is an article from 2019 that said artificial turf has a number of benefits over natural grass. However, many athletes prefer to play on natural grass due to factors including perceived injury rate, discomfort, and fatigability. What's with all of this discussion about the injuries?
Yeah, I don't get it. When he came out and, you know, they said, well, from 18 to 21, or 20, you know, 21, so you're talking a three-year period, they noticed that, you know, the Titans led the NFL, or Nissan Field led the NFL in lower body injuries, and I'm trying to think back to like how many lower body injuries did we see from 2018 to 2022, whether it be the Tennessee Titans or other teams that have come here to Nissan Stadium. I don't think we've seen, and listen, I could be wrong.
It's not anything that we observed exactly, on shows like this. Bing, we were like, saying, man, they got to do something about that grass. Too many guys are getting hurt. We weren't saying
I don't
that.
Think
that
was nobody not a was saying that,
but they clearly did some research, and it was interesting. They put it 18 through 21, right? Mm-hmm. So it was 18, 19, 20, 21. So they didn't even include this past season where the injuries were the worst for the Titans. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of them were on the grass as opposed to turf, but they clearly had something mm-hmm. to go on there. I do. My theory is a little bit of, look, they're looking for reasons. They're looking for things to try to figure out, how did this happen? Our team was wiped out by mm-hmm. injuries this past year. What could it be? And I think that at least there was some evidence that maybe it's the grass. So maybe it's not, but it certainly can't hurt. That it can't be a whole lot worse than it has been in terms of the number of injuries they suffered. But like we said, who could prove that it was because of the grass mm-hmm. that a certain injury happened? I'll take their word for it that there were more injuries. Was it directly because of the grass? Well, we do know that playing surface has been tricky to mm-hmm. upkeep, right? With all the weather changing, the grass going dormant, the amount of work, they had to put the new sod down and stuff. The footing may not have been great, but once again, does that prove that there were more injuries? You can't prove it.
I will go along with what Vrabel said. Guys were just slipping. The conditions, you know, the footing was bad for his team, and I'm sure the footing was bad for the other teams, but he's not concerned about the other teams. He's concerned about his team. And yeah, there were guys slipping. So if they want to change the turf because it's just too much maintenance
over
like the last 3 months of the season every year, then that's just say that. But and like Willie said, and we've said this yesterday, I'm sure they did their homework and they did their studies. But I'm trying to recall, like, how many lower body injuries did that field have from 18 to 21? Like, is there 4 years of injuries they can show us? Like, if you're going to say this, then if we ask for the receipts, can you give them to us? Like, can you show us? Because I'm pretty sure you can show the number, the guy who got injured or guys who got injured. Are you just talking about football, or are you talking about soccer too? Or are you talking about the college games that were played on this field, the high school games
That's
that were played
question.
On this field? What are you talking about?
There were a
lot
of soccer
games. Are
you talking
about just games played, period? Or are you talking just the Titans? Because if you talk about games playing, period, then okay, soccer, but soccer flops a lot, so was it?
They got their own
fields exactly.
Now.
But the injuries can be documented, right?
Yeah, they can be documented. That's what I'm saying. Is it a totality of injuries, meaning all sports, or is it just the NFL?
You could also be more specific to when the weather changes, right?
At
around November. Is there more November, December, when it really becomes mm-hmm. tougher to keep up the surface and it's chewed up on more? There's a lot of different details you could or questions you could ask about some research.
See, some people just look at this and be like, oh, okay, I'll take it. But no, I don't think the three of us is just going to take that for face value and say, okay, they said it, it must be right. Because we're all three of us are looking like, what? Like, okay.
And like, maybe.
Can you show us to tell us?
There's a lot of hamstring, like soft tissue injuries. Uh-huh. So did Vrabel look at it like, okay, Christian Fulton, who was dealing with hamstring injuries, or AJ Brown last year, was that a result of I had to like kind of put my leg in a forcocked way?
Did I put a lot of stress on it?
I don't know. I mean, like. And if it is for maintenance reasons, convenience reasons, where they want to have the Tennessee high school football state championships at Nissan Stadium, and they want to have Taylor Swift at Nissan Stadium and not have to worry about the grass, that's fine. I totally understand that aspect of it. But I feel like next season, if, knock on all the wood, the Titans have the same number of injuries or rate of injuries that they've had the last couple of seasons, then we're all going to be looking at it like, well, what was with the turf then?
Mm-hmm.
And not that it's money out of any of our pockets, but if you're going to point to the grass being the issue and the issue continues, well, clearly there's another issue there that needs to be solved.
Yeah, I did read and take note that they put this particular type of surface down in the bubble. Mm-hmm. They seem to like it. I think the company has, I think, tried to sell that. I think they can cut down on injuries.
But they don't practice on that surface a lot.
Not a lot. You don't go into the bubble a lot.
They don't practice on that surface a lot.
And so I wonder if eventually they'll put, you know, they've got, what, 3 fields that they practice on outside. Will they eventually make one of them, especially if it's their permanent surface is going to be on this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Do they make at least one of the practice fields eventually that surface too, outside, so they're practicing on it more often? I don't know. Like, that way, you like, if you have a game coming up on Sunday that's on grass, maybe you practice on grass. Got a home game coming up, maybe you're more apt to practice.
I don't think
more.
They were going turf.
I
don't think
so. You're still in that old school that turf is
like,
more.
Yeah, you don't, even though I understand, because I'm going to go with what Vrabel said. Too many guys are just the footy.
Mm-hmm.
The field is horrible during the latter months. That's what I'm going with. If that is indeed the case, then yes, if your head coach is pointing this out, like, listen, this is a disadvantage for our team, then as an owner, you got to be like, okay, you're right. Let's put the turf down. I can't buy the other one. I really can't. I could see if we were on turf first and then wanting to go to grass, I can understand that. But going from grass then to turf, I'm not buying that. But if you do put turf as one of your playing surfaces for practice, I think those guys at the facility, they do an excellent job of getting that turf ready. And they can stagger it so that they can keep the grass looking good all year round. It may not be always green, but it's the footing is good enough. But to throw a team out there in a week, coaches are very leery about that. They don't even like practicing indoors. They're very leery about putting a team on turf to practice for a full week because they understand that, yeah, we can get injured on this turf.
Yeah, you know? Maybe you don't get injured, but it does seem to be different
on
the joints.
Yeah, it wears you down. I can't see Vrabel wanting – and they might.
Now, maybe this new stuff is better with that. I mean,
it's vegan,
so
it should be better.
It's vegan, it's organic, it's got coconut shells.
It's from Whole Foods.
It's from Whole Foods.
Yeah.
So maybe that does ensure more health. But like, here's the only other thing I think about, too, is you're not going to have a surface that is going to eliminate injuries.
No.
Right? But it's kind of like the argument, I don't want to get political at all, but like, there's some people that are making the argument with the mass shootings, which is a problem. You're never going to eliminate them, right? That's the argument on one side. Well, there's nothing you can do. You're not going to make it zero. But if you could take it down 10 to 15%, would that be – what measures would you take that could prove that you could do that? That's a good argument. I think the same thing with concussions and injuries, right? You're never going to eliminate them from football. But if putting this surface can prove over time, maybe by the time they open the new stadium, that their injuries have gone down 15 or 20%, then I think they can say, okay, that was worthwhile.
Yeah, and I think any of us would have taken 10% fewer injuries with the Titans because that would have been a significant difference.
And which 10%? Like, which players are we talking about? But if that is in general, anything would help, right?
Exactly.
It couldn't have been much worse.
Gene's got a thought. What's up, Gene?
Gene.
Go ahead, Gene.
Oh.
Gene?
Gene.
Gene, Gene.
All right, call's back.
Okay. Okay, there you
go.
Right,
there we
go, Gene.
There we are, Gene.
Sorry about that. I just got in the car, guys. Hey, two observations I've got. Number one, everybody's OC, DC, everybody, assistant coaches are all on the chopping block. Anybody think of the strength and conditioning coaches? Because that's where injuries start, number one. And number two, do we not have plans for a new stadium? Why are we putting in a $1 million field plus 2, 3, 4, 5 years from a new stadium? I'll hang up and listen. I appreciate your show.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Gene. Everyone's been talking about the strength and conditioning coaches. Yeah. But
they're always the first person you turn
to.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to blame
injuries
them.
Injuries don't start there.
Yeah, I'm not going to blame them.
The strength and conditioning coaches cannot avoid Ryan Tannehill's ankle getting rolled up underneath them. The strength and conditioning coaches cannot avoid Harold Landry tearing his ACL in training camp. The strength and conditioning coaches only do what the doctors and the coaches tell them to do. I know that's an easy finger to point. Injuries, conditioning, so on and so forth. But if the coaches say, hey, Jeffrey Simmons is playing this weekend, they say, aye, aye, Captain. Mm-hmm. Will do.
Well, to me, you know, I'm sure, and I have not met them, but I'm sure they've hired a really good strength and conditioning coach or coaches. And listen, if these guys can't practice or if they're injured, then they modify everything that they're doing in the weight room based upon that player's ability to do what he needs to do on the field. They're not going to look at, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, who's dealing with an ankle, and say, Jeffrey, you still got to come in here and squat 400, 500 pounds.
Right.
No, they're going to modify it so he's not doing any, you know, lower body weights or anything that's going to put, you know, weight on his ankle. So I'm not, they are like the last people I blame in this whole thing, if I blame them at all.
Right, and I think some people are just trying to look at something to blame, and that feels like an obvious one. But we are giving away a pair of tickets to see Adam Sandler be the first person to answer Willie's trivia question correctly, and you are going to see Adam Sandler on February 17th at Bridgestone Arena.
Okay, so we figured let's marry Adam Sandler with Adam Sandler's career. He's done some sports movies, right? One of them, of course, is The Waterboy. This is a piece of cake. If you like Adam Sandler's movies, 615-737-1025. What was his character's name in The Waterboy? 615-737-1025. Do not text. Well, you can text. You're not going to win.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063. The game. And hey, it is Love Week, brought to you by A Moment's Peace Day Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs. You've won a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Day Salon and Day Spa. Call in Robbie and Rex Road to win a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Day Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs and qualify for a chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. We got a whole lot of thoughts on the turf versus grass situation into your personal text line, Willie.
And we have a winner in our trivia question.
Yeah, that Eric, was. Eric is our winner.
Congratulations to Eric. He's going to see Adam Sandler because he has seen The Waterboy, and he knows that it was
Bobby Boucher.
Bobby Boucher. And, of course, Caroline, being an LSU person, probably has met a lot of Bouchers.
A whole lot of Bouchers, a whole lot of Boudreaux, a whole lot of Thibodeaux. It's like Smith. But we had an inquiry into your personal text line, Willie. We're having the conversation about turf versus grass. And the argument for so many years, I felt like, has been turf is more conducive to injuries. The Titans' argument is the turf will help prevent injuries. It has been plaguing the Titans over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and so I was sent a list of season-ending injuries. And so this is where I think the study has come from, is when you track season-ending injuries, there are more. Since 2018, there are more on the Nissan Stadium grass than there are for the Titans on turf. Now, as you pointed out, Caroline, not all road games are played on turf.
Right.
So the percentages would tell you that there's a more of a chance you play 8 games at Nissan Stadium every year that this would be the case. But the fact is, I mean, they have had way more season-ending injuries at Nissan Stadium grass than anywhere else, it appears, since 2018.
And my next question would be, how many of those were because it was grass, yeah, not turf?
Well, that's what I wonder if a Mike Vrabel.
Injuries, or were they contact injuries?
Yeah. Well, but, and they've got them listed. You know, Taylor Lewan's original ACL, Ryan Tannehill's high ankle sprain, which, you know, to me, that would be an example of contact just remembering injury. That play. It looked like Nicholas Petit-Frere got pushed down and just landed on Tannehill's ankle the wrong way. And he was evading the rush in L.A. when he re-injured it.
Exactly.
For sure. And so you could probably make the argument that those injuries could have happened regardless of the surface.
Surface, yeah.
Right? That grass, may or may not have to do with turf. Anything that of the surface, right? So I'm wondering, like, if a Mike Vrabel looks at the tape of all these injuries and says, okay, yeah, I think that's where the surface might have been a factor there. Like, we could all have our own interpretation.
Or are they just looking at it from just like a broad, painting it with a broad brush and say, well, these injuries happen on the field.
Yeah.
So we are classifying them as on-field injuries regardless of if they were engaged with a player, somebody fell on them, you know, were they tackled when that all happened. You know, we're not in a court of law, so we're not going to do all that. It's just, okay, it's black and white. It's the injury and it's the non-injury. And I get it. I understand that part.
And it's the Titans that have to pay for it, right? Like the caller brought up, you know, why would you do this
when
you're just a few years away from going to a new stadium anyway?
If you see it worth it.
Yeah, if you want to, if Andy wants to pay for it, then so be it.
If you think this could cut down on injuries by 10 to 20%, is that worth it? Well, I think you would probably say yes,
obviously,
if that's the case.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, I hear a lot of the argument being, well, they're going to put a turf field in so the players can get used to a turf field whenever they do transition into the new stadium. And to that I say, as a player, aren't you just acclimated to it anyway?
Yeah, like, you've been playing on it for so long. I mean, it's not like – now, obviously, there's different kinds of field turf. This one is more of a vegan field turf, as we coined
Helix
it. Yes. And you need to take the blue pill or the red pill to actually play on it. But no, if me, the injuries, I'm going to put that aside. I would be, you know, for new turf, you know, if they would ask me if what my opinion would be, I would lean more toward what Vrabel said. Listen, when it comes, you know, later in the year, during the season, you know, the grass is hard to maintain it.
Yeah.
And my guys are slipping, and that's a disadvantage for us. So having field turf, at least we know there's consistent footing throughout the season, no matter if it's – now, it's going to be a little bit slicker because it's raining, but we're not going to have the falling – that we were having, you know, guys falling down and all this other stuff. We're not going to have that as much now with the field turfs as we did with natural grass, because come late November into December and January, you know, it's us trying to put in new sod. That sod hasn't fully, you know, did its job as far as with the soil and everything. So it's not sturdy enough. So guys are going out there and they're slipping. That would be the only thing he had to say to me as an owner, because I'm trying to get every advantage possible for my players. So if the head coach come to me and say that, and we've had too many of them, and I've been watching the games, I'm like, yeah, let's change the turf. I'm good with it.
The list that Willie was sent is season-ending injuries, and obviously those are bad, but also what was plaguing the Titans was like the tweaks here and there, the hamstrings, that you're out for a couple of weeks, and then you're back, and then you're out for a couple of weeks. So I'd be interested to see the number of those at Nissan Stadium or on turf versus on grass and how that's affected, because obviously season-ending injuries are going to hurt your team.
That's
but it's
a
also
good point.
The nicks here and there.
Yeah, I think that would, if I'm trying to do research, I would think you want to get that data in there too. And it's so interesting we're talking about this, because 1 year ago after the Super Bowl, what was Odell Beckham Jr. squawking about? And he got some people, I feel like they were talking through the Players Association. There was a lot of people that stepped up to try to support Beckham, but he was saying, I blew my knee out
on turf.
His foot got stuck. You can
and this was a
see
brand
it.
New this is a brand new stadium, right? I don't know what the surface is in SoFi,
but,
right?
But turf
same
is this.
Thing. It is the I looked it up today.
Is
it's
it
the Helix Matrix turf? Uh-oh.
The Matrix.
He didn't take the wrong pill. Yeah, he took the wrong pill.
They also have it at Energy SoFi, and there was another stadium that also has this turf. Mm-hmm. So it's not a new material, but you know, it's the Whole Foods.
But
factor.
As a player, it just, you know, you don't think about it. You know, when you're actually in the game. But after the game, after you've played on it, like the first couple of weeks, you're fine. But as the season goes on and you're playing more turf game than grass games, man, that stuff, it does a number on your body, on your joints.
It absolutely did in the old days.
It wears you out. Still, even with how they've made this field turf so wonderful now, but it still takes a toll on your body.
I would like everybody to bow their heads and pray for our friend Jared Stillman.
Yes.
I know is having a hard time with the news of the day. He is coming up next on Stillman and Company. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Peace.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.